Welcome to the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM. Now, here's your host, Dr. Mike Wall.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Wall, and today we are talking about celiac disease and gluten intolerance. Celiac disease is a serious autoimmune disease that occurs in genetically predisposed people where the ingestion of gluten leads to damage in the small intestine, and it's estimated that it affects 1 in 100 people worldwide. Well, today with us, we've got a couple of really great experts to help shed light on the topic. Our first guest is a returning guest. Her name is Adriana Smallwood. She's a registered dietitian who sits on the Professional Advisory Council for the Canadian Celiac Association and has a private dietetics practice where she focuses specifically on celiac disease. She's the regional media spokesperson for the Dietitians of Canada here in Newfoundland, and she's celiac herself, so she got some great tips that she can share with us. Welcome to the show, Adriana.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
All right, and with her today is Grant Parisien. He's a formerly trained baker from Algonquin College in Ottawa. He specializes in baking that addresses allergies like gluten intolerance and eggs and dairy, nuts, and soy. And he is also the co-owner of Nourish Bakery in Paradise, which is turning 6 years old this year. Welcome to the show, Graham.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, guys, I want to get right to the beginning of it and start right from the beginning when it comes to what celiac disease is. Adriana, can you explain to folks what the condition is and how it impacts us?
Well, celiac disease is a lifelong autoimmune disease. And when someone has an autoimmune disease, their body kind of attacks itself. So what happens is when someone ingests gluten who has celiac disease, the gluten would attack their small intestine, and that would lead to different types of malabsorption and nutrient deficiencies down the line. And that could even lead to other autoimmune diseases and some forms of stomach cancer. So that's why it's so important to get properly tested because, you know, it has lifelong impacts on your body.
Right. Well, I've heard analogies before about the small intestine. It's sort of like one of those corrugated vacuum hoses where it's got lots of ridges, but when it gets swollen because it's ingesting the wrong type of nutrient, it gets all swollen. So it's almost like a raisin that turns into a grape and there's less room to absorb in the stomach. Is that one of the reasons why it causes such turmoil for the gut?
Small intestine has these small finger-like projections. So think about, like, if you put out your hand with your fingers and you're wiggling it around, and that increases the surface area of your intestine so that you can absorb as much as possible. So what happens is those cilia, we call them the hair-like projections, they become quite damaged and flattened. So they lose the ability to absorb nutrients, and that's what leads to the deficiencies down the line.
That makes sense. Okay, so what is gluten in particular?
Gluten is a protein that's found in certain grains, so it's not just wheat. It is also in rye and barley, as well as triticale, spelt, and kamut, which is really important to know because there is, every single day, there's some sort of new flour being offered on the shelf, so it's important to know. And there is a further listing on celiac.ca where you can see all the other forms of gluten. And it basically creates, the gluten molecule creates a toxic-like reaction, but only in individuals who have celiac disease, and that's what prevents the absorption of the essential nutrients.
So it's got to be hard to navigate for a lot of people. Graham, I'm assuming you've been touched by food allergies and maybe even celiac because you opened your bakery specializing in this. Like, what's your story behind this?
Now, I do have an aunt that has celiac disease. Wasn't really close to the aunt growing up. Actually, I had no idea she had celiac disease up until, I think, my late teen years. But I always just wanted to change the game in the baking industry a little bit. A lot of it is very geared toward a single all-purpose flour, an enriched wheat flour. And, you know, in Newfoundland, we realized that there was a lot of celiacs and gluten-intolerant people, as well as food allergies, so we just wanted to create a safe place for them.
That makes sense, and I'm sure that people looking for options, it's not as easy to find in a place like Newfoundland where, you know, we've got less selection when it comes to some specialty products too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some symptoms? Like, so if I was celiac and I had white flour, Adriana, what type of symptoms would I see?
The symptoms are very, I would say,
broad.
Total body thing. Yeah, they're totally broad. And there's 50 to 60 different things, you know. But the ones that mostly people present with are things like diarrhea, constipation, unexplained weight loss from nutrients, malabsorption usually. But stomach pain and bloating, chronic fatigue, weakness, low iron levels, muscle cramps, bone and joint pain. Lesser known type symptoms would be something like unexplained fertility. So women having fertility issues that they haven't been able to pinpoint really what's going on. And sometimes one of the only symptoms is abnormal liver function tests. So if someone's getting their blood work done, they have no other issues, but there's some kind of weird liver function test going on. It's elevated, then that could be what's going on. And another one that people commonly complain about is headaches and brain fog and lactose intolerance. So those would be the main ones, but they're mostly GI related or related to energy levels and headaches.
Yeah, I've read when doing some research for the show is like up to 200 different types of symptoms. Graham, what do you see when people come in and what are they looking for?
Geez, everything from skin rashes. We have a few customers that complain about back pain. Gluten is directly related to inflammation, right? So it can affect your entire body differently. I have one customer that experiences some sort of vision impairment, which obviously can be very scary if you're not very safe or unsure that you get gluten if you're driving. They range all over from aches and pains to your intestinal tract issues, bloating, diarrhea, constipation. Pretty well what every Adriana touched on and much, much more.
What are some of the triggers that does somebody always have celiac disease or do they grow into it? Because I know some allergies can develop as we get older, but is it something that people become aware of at different stages of their life? Like, how do people know they got celiac?
Some don't.
Some really don't. And it can be, I've seen people getting diagnosed from a very early age to their first introduction to food. There was an 84-year-old patient once that I dealt with. But it is an inherited condition, so you do have to have some genetic factors. And first-degree relatives of someone with celiac have the highest risks. So, we always encourage people, even if they're not symptomatic and not showing any symptoms, if they have a first-degree relative, it's really important to get screened because around 60% of people are asymptomatic, so they won't have any issues, but that doesn't mean that there's no damage occurring. Those 60% often have damage done to their intestinal tract. They just are unaware of it. So not everyone has symptoms who has celiac. There are certain triggers, environmental things such as emotional stress, pregnancy, a lot of times brings it out. Some types of infections can onset symptoms later in life. So really you can develop at any age, which is hard to pinpoint. I myself didn't find out till I was 28, and that was after 10 years of rigorous testing to try and figure out what it could possibly be. So a lot of times it isn't a first thing that people go to. It's usually IBS or Crohn's or colitis. Celiac isn't often on the radar when they're testing to rule out gastrointestinal symptoms or things like headaches. They usually go to other things first.
Or the bad back, that Graham talked about. Walk us through that medical test, because I think some people, it's a relatively new concept. I mean, celiac disease has been around for a long time, but I think people are becoming more conscious of it, so they may not even know if they've got family members, because their family members might not have been tested. What is the medical test that people get done?
The first screening piece is a blood test. It tests something called your TTG, and it's not something that's on the regular blood work. It's something that you have to have added. So, make sure you talk to your doctor about adding that if you feel like you want to be screened for it. 90% of the time, it has a 90% accuracy, but that is why we always say that you should get your small intestinal biopsy. So that would be the second thing. You would have to get an upper endoscopy, which involves putting a scope down your esophagus into your stomach and goes into your small intestine. And then they take a small piece of your intestine and look at it under a microscope to see if you do have celiac or not. And that's the gold standard. And the reason we say, you should always get the biopsy is because of that 10% inaccuracy that could happen with the TTG. The other thing, too, is there is a genetic test. It's called the HLA DQ2 DQ8 test. But 40% of Americans have that gene, but only 0.5 to 1% of those people will ever develop celiac. So the only thing the genetic test is really good for is ruling out if you don't have it. So if you don't have those genes, then you'll never develop it. But if you have those genes, it's more likely that you will never develop celiac. So it's better to get the blood testing screen followed by the intestinal biopsy.
Right. And is there any population that seems to be more prone to it? Men, women, certain racial groups, different age groups?
There is a higher ratio in Europe, and it's shown to be higher in females and higher in children than adults. So it does vary by sex, age, and geographic location.
Well, that's a lot of information in a very short period of time. We're going to jump to break, but we're here with Adriana Smallwood, spokesperson for the Celiac Association, and Grand Parisien from Nourish Bakery. We'll be right back after this break.
The Health and Wellness Show will be right back on your VOCM. Now back to Dr. Mike Wall. This is the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM.
Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Adriana Smallwood, registered dietitian, and Grand Parisien, baker from Nourish Bakery. Today we are talking about celiac disease. Before the break, we were talking about how to diagnose medically to see if you're celiac or not. But Graham, you've probably seen people that are able to determine it on their own through their own little case control study on themselves. Tell us about that.
Yeah, most through their own diet through process of elimination realize, you know, after eliminating certain food groups that their symptoms go away, which is why most don't actually go get tested for celiac disease, because you'd have to reintroduce those foods that are giving you, obviously, the negative symptoms.
Yeah, and that can be a long period of time, and sometimes you just stop taking it. I guess they would start. How quickly can they start to feel better when they start to remove food?
Some find it in a few weeks, some find it in a few days, some find it in a few months. Everybody's different, right?
Yeah, very different, but let's talk real world here now. We're in Newfoundland. It's hard enough sometimes to get fresh vegetables. Last episode, we talked about gardening and growing our own food. I've been out west before, like the West Coast, and food availability of healthy food is everywhere. It's probably just as easy to get gluten-free as it is to get regular baked goods. But what are the challenges people have when they're trying to eat gluten-free here, Grant?
Well, for one, in Newfoundland, we don't have much grain production, so you rely on a lot of mass production foods that you would find in grocery stores, or there are a few specialty food grocery stores around that do bring in some specific items for gluten intolerance and celiac disease, and then, of course, there's us.
Right, exactly. So they come there, and for example, what would be some of the things that people can add back in if they're able to eat gluten-free? What would be the things they can eat, I guess, and what are some things they can't?
Things that they would add, other grains, would be like millet, sorghum, buckwheat, obviously rice and brown rice, tapioca and potato is good. A lot more beans, a lot more legumes.
Getting away from some of the pastas and breads and some of those things that we tend to migrate to sometimes.
Yeah, your basic wheat, rye, and barley.
Does that food cost a lot more, or is it comparable?
No, it's not comparable whatsoever. Most gluten-free grains or products are up to 400% more.
Wow. Wow. That's great. Adriana, you probably see that a lot when you're trying to teach people how to eat gluten-free as well.
100%. I mean, most loaves of bread range from $7 to $10. So it's a very high price point, especially if you're going through, you know, multiple loaves of bread and you have multiple people with celiac disease in the house. It can get pretty costly. And they do have, you can claim it on your taxes as a medical expense, but then if you make a certain income, you're exempt. You don't really qualify for that either. So it can be pretty pricey.
And you would have to also have the diagnosis from your doctor.
Go through the whole formal test at the same time. Are there any tips you can have while people are trying to eat gluten-free then?
Buy bulk when on sale, especially being in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
I find a lot, you know, make stuff at your own leisure. Find out what you enjoy or did enjoy and do your best to try and replicate.
There are lots of great recipes out there. And then when they need a special treat, then go and get the special treat from the bakery. And then you can have your cake and eat it too, literally, right?
That's what we just learned.
Exactly.
That works out well. Yeah. So are there any nutritional deficits, though? Like, so that's another question. So now you've taken these other foods out, you know, like, what are you potentially lacking anything from gluten, from excluding gluten, or actually are you going to gain more because your stomach is working better? Adriana, want to take that one?
Well, it's a little bit of both, really. You know, at the beginning, when you're first diagnosed, you do have a lot of deficiencies, but going forward, a lot of gluten-free foods inherently are low in fiber and higher in fat and higher in sugar to try and make up for those texture differences and taste differences you're going to find when you take the gluten out, basically. So we find that, you know, the gluten-free diet is really low in fiber and really high in fat. And especially when you're healing in the beginning, it can lead to a huge jump in your weight because you're absorbing nutrients better, but then you're also consuming products that have higher fat and higher sugar. The other thing, too, is B vitamins, which are energy vitamins. You know, normally bread, pasta, cereals, they, you know, they're enriched with B vitamins because, you know, a lot of people don't have a big intake of these. And especially in vegan and vegetarian populations, you know, B vitamins are, you know, preferentially found in animal sources. So if they're not getting it, it can be very detrimental. So it becomes important to make sure you're taking a B vitamin supplement. Vitamin D and calcium are another big one because lactose intolerance, due to the damage that happens to your intestine, your lactose receptors are right at the very tip of those hair-like projections we were talking about. So most individuals with celiac disease, at the beginning, when they have the damage, they can't tolerate lactose. For some people, that comes back. For some, it never does. So, you know, there's due to the malabsorption that happens when the damage was happening and then not consuming as much calcium and vitamin D after the fact, we find that the risk of osteoporosis and those types of things increase, and calcium and vitamin D is huge. So those are something else you want to make sure you're trying to get. So ensuring that, you know, if you are having some sort of a plant-based milk or soy milk, that it is enriched with vitamin D and calcium, or orange juices have been enriched with vitamin D and calcium too. And those are the big key ones that you need to look out for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like people forget that things like breads and cereals are often fortified with their with extra vitamins and minerals. Like, I know iodine was in bread for a long time. When they changed that, it actually caused some health issues for people in the general population.
Yeah, the opposite happens when you're having too much of it too, right?
Okay. Well, let's clarify that gluten-free baking can taste really, really good, Graham. What are some of the things that you're able to make gluten-free that, you know, people might not think you could actually prepare?
Everything. everything can be replicated. Now, just keep in mind, your cost is going to go up. The amount of ingredients, because it's not always just one specific grain. There's always a blend of flours or more ingredients to make up for the lack of gluten in texture and whatnot. And then what I have found over the last 6 years is the labor is much, much more intensive.
Oh, I can imagine that for sure. And even just the shopping and ordering and getting the food in would probably be a challenge in itself.
Absolutely. We order bulk flour all the way from BC, believe it or not. Comes on a truck, multiple skids. We just got a flour order actually the other week, 1,800 kilos.
Wow.
And I'm hoping that lasts us for 2 to 3 months.
Wow. That's a lot of flour.
It is.
Okay, well, I got another baking question while we're on you here. I've heard that sourdough bread is a better choice for people that are gluten sensitive, not gluten intolerant or celiac. But have you heard that? Can you guys explain a little bit about that?
I've heard it a lot. Now, of course, okay. So what happens during the fermentation with sourdoughs? The gluten molecules get broken down. Now, the final product still does have gluten in it. Just the, I guess, parts per million would be much, much lower. As far as it being safe for someone with celiac disease, definitely not. Someone with a gluten intolerance may be able to tolerate it.
Okay. Well, actually, that's a good point. So it breaks down gluten. Adriana, explain what gluten actually is molecularly, like where it comes from.
Well, like I mentioned, it's a protein, but, you know, just with an allergy, just think about like a peanut allergy. You know, you can't touch it, you can't smell it. For some people, if it's airborne, gluten is very much the same. And I tell people, like, I've seen on the shelf, like, gluten cutters and gluten reducers, and it doesn't work the same as lactose intolerance. When you have, like, a lactose intolerance, you're deficient in the lactase. It's not breaking it down. So you can take a pill. But with the protein molecule for gluten, it can be broken down, but you react to all breakdown products, all the small breakdown products of the gluten. So it doesn't matter how it's broken down. the fragments are still there, so you're still reacting to the whole thing, and that's why protein is very hard to denature and degrade. The point where it would not affect you, it would have to be burned to a point where it would not be edible. So there's no way, really, right now, there's nothing on the market that can help you that you can take and then eat gluten and be fine.
Yeah. So deep fryers do not destroy gluten.
No. The temperature would make it inedible. That would have to kill gluten. And that is something that we hear very often. Hey, Graham.
Often. Too often.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm guessing that if it comes from things like wheat and grains and things like that, then beer might be off the table. Can people consume alcohol if they've got celiac disease?
Yes, most distilled alcohol beverages are gluten-free. The gluten molecule is too large to make it through that distillation process, and it gets left behind, and the resulting liquid is gluten-free. But then you have to look at your alcohols that they're adding things back into, like flavorings and colorings. All of those, like wine coolers and different kinds of coolers, you have to make sure that there's no types of barley malt in there, things such as bottled wine coolers, ales, lagers, malty, milky beverages, like those mud slides and different things like that. Anything that has malted milk or malted barley, you really have to avoid. And the big thing is that there are a lot of gluten-free beers and ciders on the market right now because it's something that's very trendy. You need to make sure that if you have celiac, you're having a beer that's made from a gluten-free grain right from the start, because these beers, where they remove the gluten molecule, it's not fully removed, and the test that they use for gluten doesn't pick up the molecule. So what happens is they put this clarification product into the beer. It binds the gluten molecule, and it's supposed to remove it, but the test that they use to test gluten is for dispersed molecules, so it doesn't pick up those binded gluten products. So it's an inaccurate test, so it's impossible to find out the gluten content of a gluten-reduced beer. So it's very important that you make sure you're having a beer that's made from gluten-free grains right from the get-go, and the same with ciders. There's a lot of, you know, Molson has a gluten-free cider. I wouldn't trust that because it's made in a facility that produces gluten. So it's really important to make sure you're getting a cider that comes from a cidery, and that's the only thing that they're producing there.
Okay, well, that's just something to talk about in the next half of the show. We're going to jump to a break, but I'm here with Adriana Smallwood, advisor for the Celiac Association, and Graham Parisien, allergy-free baker. We'll be right back after this break.
The Health and Wellness Show will be right back on your VOCM. Now back to Dr. Mike Wall. This is the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM.
Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Adriana Smallwood, advisor for the Celiac Association, and Graham Parisien, allergy-free baker from Nourish Bakery. Guys, before the break, we were talking about alcohol and how sometimes things may or may not be gluten-free as advertised. If I'm walking through a grocery store and I'm new to the world of being celiac, and I'm looking at a label, how can I tell what really is gluten-free? Adriana?
We have what we would say like a list. And if you go again to the celiac.ca, they have a great document. It's a brand new document that we've been working on for the past few months, which talks about higher risk products and lower risk products. And what I mean by that is that there are some products where you would purchase them and they should absolutely have a gluten-free claim. And that would be things like flour. You know, buckwheat flour, inherently gluten-free, but it needs to have a gluten-free claim because a lot of grains, a lot of different flours have the same processing equipment. So that that buckwheat grain could have been broken up on the same equipment that wasn't washed with gluten. So you need to ensure with higher risk products like that, that there is a gluten-free claim. But, you know, things, I would stay away from the highly processed things because the more ingredients you add, the higher the risk of contamination. So, you know, fresh produce, fresh meats, eggs, dairy, those types of things, you know, that have minimal processing that wouldn't have been, have the potential for any cross-contamination. That would be my main thing. And then, like I said, making sure that the other things, reading the labels always. You know, here in Canada, we have great labeling laws. It has to say if it may contain or contains gluten or wheat. So just reading the label to make sure that there's no wheat in the ingredients and that it doesn't have a may contains or a contains statement. And then, again, looking for that gluten-free claim.
Yeah, because I'm getting the feeling that any amount is going to trigger it. It's not like a trans fat-free where they changed the serving size so that it was below the amount they had to report, but it still has some trans fats in it. you basically cannot be exposed to gluten at all if you're celiac, right?
There's a minimal amount. It's 20 parts per million in a product. And if it has above that, it does have to say that it contains gluten. But manufacturers, of course, would aim for 0 parts per million in their product. Now, this is a big thing that comes up. There are some products that are labeled gluten-free, and they'll have a statement on the back that says may contain wheat. And that was a big thing that triggered our new document. And that's just because gluten has an established threshold of the 20 parts per million. But wheat is, you know, having an anaphylactic reaction to wheat, this can cause you to die. You know, not like we're gluten where it's just going to cause you an upset stomach. So even if something has been tested and the product is 20 parts per million or less of gluten and it says gluten-free, if there's that minimal amount, it could have come in contact with wheat. It's allowed on the label, even though that's like a labeling restriction. So, you know, there's that question all the time, and we're trying to get around that, and we're trying to advocate for better policies when it comes to that. But that kind of labeling is allowed. And I would say that, you know, I would stay away from a product that says something like that, just in case.
So, yeah, and then so cross-contamination is a big thing. Graham, when you're baking, you must have to be really careful about contaminating different sources of flours or foods that contain gluten.
Yep. So all our flours come from sources that are obviously gluten-free, no contamination whatsoever. Big thing, though, is equipment. Necessarily, if you want to have a oven, now, of course, there's no set-in-stone regulation over this, but if you buy an oven secondhand that was used for wheat for 50 years, there's going to be flour all in that oven, all in the motor, and so on and so forth. So we have to, you know, for our own peace of mind and the safety of our customers, we've gone with brand new equipment all over the board. As far as ingredients, we get it from a few specific suppliers that we know that we can trust. And we got food spec sheets that details what that manufacturer, what the producer also deals with, and what would have may have come in contact on the processing equipment.
Okay, so that's you with your bakery that's dedicated towards it. What about the person, the parent, that realizes they're celiac, their kids don't have it, they're preparing their sandwiches for their kid before school, and then they've got to try and prepare a gluten-free meal for themselves? What are some tips for them?
Yeah, so that gets a little more interesting. Again, one, you have to keep in mind that flour stays airborne for about 48 hours, and the smallest molecule that you can really see with your eye is when dust flies into the light. Now, of course, like, you know, when you're smelling stuff in the air, you know, it is there, you just can't see it. So you have to be very, very diligent about sanitation, specifically surfaces. But the one big thing that we tell all our customers, especially newly diagnosed, wooden utensils. I have a little bit of a woodworking background, and wood is very, very, very porous. So if you had flour on that wooden cutting board, there will always be some sort of gluten molecule in that cutting board. So we recommend getting all new brand new utensils if you're using wood. Plastics and metals can be sanitized a little bit more diligently. But yeah, cross-contamination is a huge, huge thing. Toasters as well. There is these products on the market that are a little like toaster sleeves. So you put your bread in the sleeve and then in the toaster, it prevents any cross-contamination with the crumbs. But a lot of it is just on your own diligence of sanitizing and being aware. Over time, becomes routine, but in the beginning, you should get into good habits.
Yeah, there's the four stages of learning, and the second stage or third stage is conscious competence, which means you're trying real hard to ride that bike straight, but it takes a lot of thought. I've actually got a colleague I work with, and she uses a separate toaster completely from everybody else and keeps it in her office and separate, and it allows her to keep it from being contaminated with other people's breads, because that would set her off, I'm sure. And so, okay, so that's some good tips. Are there some places where people can buy some baking supplies for, like, the flours and things like that here in St. John's or in Newfoundland?
Yeah, most grocery stores nowadays have their own gluten-free section. Now, again, some of the products are from the States, down south, where they have a little bit different regulations on labeling. Like Adrienne had mentioned a little bit previously, in Canada with the CFIA, if there is any of the any possibility of the top 10 allergens, it has to be labeled on there as may contain. Whereas down in the States, it's kind of more of a buyer beware up to the discretion of the producer.
Yeah, it's like that. I think it's something the industry is more regulated in Canada as well. We've got a few more rules, a little more stringent when it comes to that, which is for our benefit at the end of the day.
Oh, absolutely. A lot more peace of mind. But again, yeah, there is a lot more products now, and there's more and more mass production companies popping up. Every store brand, like President's Choice and whatnot, has their own gluten-free line nowadays. So there is a lot of options out there for those with celiac disease and gluten intolerance.
Well, that's good.
One thing I would caution against, though, sorry to interrupt, but bulk stores, they do have some gluten-free flours that are prepackaged, but they do have gluten-free flours in their bins, and that would be, like Graham mentioned about flour being in the air for 48 hours, I would never recommend that someone who has celiac get their gluten-free bulk flour from bin stores, because you don't know if the when it's opened, if it was cross-contaminated or if the utensils that those scoops and stuff got mixed around. I would only ever buy flour that was in a package, unless it was from somewhere like Nourish Bakery, where you know that there's no gluten in the facility.
Right. Okay, well, that's another thing. So you're going out now and you're trying to eat healthy and stay on a diet that's low, that there's no gluten in it. Adriana, where can people go out to get food? What are some of the options?
There's a few options around town. I always encourage people to call the restaurant first, just to make sure that they can accommodate that, because, you know, I have been told absolutely not, we cannot accommodate that. You know, there's some places, for instance, that have their own designated fryer. And like Graham and I mentioned, you know, some restaurants will say, hey, gluten is killed in the fryer, but that's not the case. And there are some restaurants that have their own designated fryer. The greatest places I've heard from so far that I've had and, you know, that have pretty stringent rules, the St. John's Fish Exchange is really good, and they have gluten-free staff. There's a place on the Irish Loop. Can you remember what that's called, Graham?
Captain's Table.
The Captain's Table. They have...
I believe a family member has celiac disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have like a whole line of gluten-free options and a designated fryer. And Landings down on the ferry terminal, they also have a designated fryer, and that chef seems pretty keen, and we've talked to him before. Curry Delight is a big one too. They are a new place. They're in Mount Pearl. They have Indian food, and they're on top of all of the regulations, and they talk to us pretty frequently, and Graham provides some of their products, don't you?
Yes, we're working together on a new pizza.
Yeah, so there's a few places around town for sure, but like I said, it's constantly changing, and I would always encourage that people call ahead, because even if they can't accommodate it, they might have special precautions where they can. I know the Keg, actually. The Keg and Milestones are also really good. The manager will come out and talk to you and deliver your food personally and make sure that there hasn't been any issues. But those are the only ones I could think of at the top of my head. But still, I would call every time and let them know, and always make a reservation, because that way there's no room for any kind of miscommunication to happen there.
And always mention that you have celiac disease. Don't mention that you're gluten intolerant. Some take it, you know, as a whole fad diet thing. But always recommend phone ahead and letting them know. Sometimes they have specific staff on hand that might be able to whip you up a dish. They might clear out an area. And, of course, I don't have celiac disease, but in my opinion, if a restaurant was going to tell you flat out no, that is better than them saying yes and getting sick.
Absolutely, yeah.
Guys, we are ready for a break. We're going to jump to that, and we'll be right back. We're here with Adriana Smallwood, advisor for the Celiac Association, and Graham Perizan, allergy-free baker from Nourish Bakery. We'll be right back.
The Health and Wellness Show will be right back on your VOCM. Now back to Dr. Mike Wall. This is the Health and Wellness Show on your VOCM.
Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Graham Perizan, allergy-free baker, and Adriana Smallwood, who's an advisor for the Celiac Association. Guys, we are talking about celiac disease and gluten today. You know, it's got to be kind of a devastating or disheartening diagnosis to be told that you have celiac disease. But is there any benefit that comes from it? Because it seems like you're going to have to be awful conscious of the foods you eat. Adriana?
I would say, well, there's a huge benefit for people who have celiac to eat gluten-free. But I think, like, with the realization that there's something in, you know, the diet that can impact people, you know, it's caused this whole wave of people to eat gluten-free. And I will say that initially, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't even an ace of the products on the market that they have now. So the gluten-free diet was eating fresh fruit, vegetables, meat, and dairy because there wasn't any of these flours and different things. So people were losing weight initially because they didn't have, you know, they weren't having a complete diet. They didn't have all the options available to them. And that could be where some of, you know, the miscommunication came about the gluten-free diet, but there is absolutely no health benefits to it. It's not something that can help you lose weight. Certainly, you know, it only really has a benefit to someone who has celiac disease. And I would encourage individuals, if they, you know, feel like they're gluten intolerant, you know, you should still talk to medical professionals to make sure that you are getting a well-balanced diet. Because like I mentioned before, there are certainly nutrients, you know, like vitamin D and calcium and iron, you know, and B vitamins, the major ones that impact our metabolism. Those are, you know, not as prevalent in a gluten-free diet. So it's something that you need to monitor and make sure that you're getting everything that you need.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you're staring at a label looking for maybe wheat or gluten-containing products. Also, you read the rest of the label too, so you start to probably get a little bit more aware of what's in all the foods you're eating, not just the gluten side of things. So you may increase your health literacy that way, at least.
Absolutely. You get used to label reading, and, you know, it blows your mind the types of things that are in food and the things that you can't even pronounce that are on those labels. But I think that this whole, the allergen craze, you know, where allergens have been increasing in our society, I think it's made a lot of people much more hyper aware of the things that are in their food. You know, people are trying to eat little as processed stuff as they can, I would say. The more people I talk to, the more I see that. You know, people are watching what they're doing. They're reading labels. They're very cognizant of what's in their food.
Yeah, and Graham, you probably see this. You have patrons that come in regularly for their baked goods. You've probably seen some success stories of people that are navigating the waters for the first time.
Absolutely. In business, you have a lot of ups and downs, but I always go back to this one memory I have. It was, I think, the first year of business. We had a mother and a little daughter come in, and, she, you know, I have kids now myself, of course, didn't back then. She must have been only, you know, 3-4 years old, and the mother bent down and talked to the daughter, said, "You can have anything you can have you want here." The kid lit up. Mother started to talk to me about, you know, the issues that she'd been having since birth, not gaining weight and so on and so forth. So there's a big disconnect when it comes to health, food, and diet. Like you had mentioned, the more now that you have to actually look at the labels because you have to look at the may contain, now you're looking at everything else.
Yeah, you start to increase that health literacy, and I think that's where a big gap is. Okay, so you don't just cook or bake gluten-free products. You deal with a whole host of other allergies. What are some other allergies people are facing?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was mainly just focusing on gluten and celiac disease. But over, you know, a short period, we realized we were getting more and more calls, people asking for dairy-free products, casein-free products, soy-free products, and some of them did have celiac disease, some did have gluten tolerance, and then there was a whole other spectrum who didn't have it that just had the allergies. But there is a direct correlation with celiac disease and other food intolerances and allergies. Mm. So we deal with everything from soy-free. Now, we are a peanut-free bakery, but we do use tree nuts within the facility. So we try not to do a whole lot of nut-free product. But eggs and dairy. Dairy is probably, I would say it's 40% of our business, believe it or not.
Yeah, so and we also know from Adriana, what she was saying is that you can have lactose intolerance as a result of being gluten intolerant. So they go hand in hand. Adrienne, do you see that a lot of time, people with concurrent sort of conditions?
I do. And the big thing, like we mentioned at the start, when Graham said that, you know, there's people who are self-diagnosing, the important thing is if you feel like you have celiac, you need to get tested because there are so many concurrent things. Like the biggest thing we're seeing now is at the Janeway, children with type 1 diabetes, mm-hmm. which is another autoimmune disease, are developing celiac. So there is always a higher risk if you have one autoimmune disease of developing another. And that risk increases if you're continuing the behavior. So if you're continuing to consume gluten, you're increasing your risk. So if you are officially diagnosed with celiac, that will be on your doctor or your gastroenterologist's radar to look for these types of things. And it also increases, like I was saying, your chances of infertility and cancer, stomach cancer, and different things like that. So, you know, there's really bad symptoms that come and long-term health consequences that come from consuming gluten and not looking for that appropriate diagnosis there. And I always like to talk about that because, you know, people say, I feel so much better. And Graham said they're less likely to start eating gluten again because you need to be eating gluten to get these tests. And that's why it's important to get the testing before you stop eating gluten to make sure that you're all clear.
I just want to add to, if you have a diagnosis of celiac disease, psychologically, you're less likely to ingest anything with gluten versus you just have an intolerance, a self-diagnosed intolerance, you might be more likely to cheat now and then.
Right.
And through my own research, I found that it takes a certain amount of time for your body to start to regenerate itself, specifically the small intestines, after being, you know, quote-unquote glutened. And if you continuously ingest gluten, say, every 2 months because you want to treat yourself, you're going back to square one.
Right. Yeah, it's like growing your hair out during the pandemic. You cut it once and it's back to being short again.
Right. Yep.
But this also brings us back to a point that, Adrienne, we talked about the first time you're on the show, and that was that, you know, nutrition really extends itself to almost every sort of health condition, whether it be chronic health conditions or allergies or things like this. It's just so essential to everything that we do in our long-term health.
100%, and that's why I became a dietitian, because 80% of chronic disease and diseases out there can be managed or prevented through diet, and that's a huge number.
Wow, and if we know that 1 in 100 people that are listening to this show have celiac disease, and probably a large proportion of the people that aren't formally diagnosed probably have an intolerance or some sort of food allergy, this is the type of information that they should pay attention to. Guys, we are starting to wind down a little bit here, but Graham, why don't you give us a few last words about what people can take away and what the words of wisdom you would have going forward?
Trust the professionals is the big one. Self-diagnosing is great. Process elimination diets are great. But having someone like Adriana, a registered dietitian, in your corner while you're going through the process, especially at the beginning, is huge. I know the Celiac Association also does have like a little celiac Bible that has all your most found ingredients in most baked goods and food production, and it lists whether it's gluten or gluten-free or not. I know that on Facebook, there's a lot of Facebook groups. Now, again, you know, grain of salt with that because not everyone on there is professional, but everyone is in it together, you know, little tips and tricks, baking at home, you know, sharing recipes because, you know, if you just start out, you might not know exactly how to make a cupcake or a basic dish for dinner because you're so used to having gluten.
Right. And you know what comes with professionals? Trust the professional bakeries like yourselves as well, because you obviously know how to navigate it.
Absolutely. Again, cross-contamination is huge. Flour stays airborne for 48 hours. There are a lot of businesses out there that offer gluten-free products, but they are made in kitchens and bakeries that contain gluten and on processing equipment that has been used with gluten.
Sounds good. Adriana, what about you?
Going along with what Graham said, you know, you want to trust your professionals, the gastroenterologist, your family doctor, and advocate for your own health. You know, like the average diagnosis rate is 10 to 12 years, and that's a global thing. So it's not just here in Canada, New Zealand, Europe. It takes 10 to 12 years to be diagnosed with celiac, and we don't know why. You know, it's not obviously, it's not something they go to right away, and we're hoping to, you know, spread more awareness about that. You know, so we're always campaigning for these types of things to know the symptoms and advocate. So, you know, there's no reason why you can't tell your doctor you're having ongoing symptoms that hasn't been mentioned. Please test me for celiac. Put that TTG on my blood work so that we can at least rule out the possibility.
Right. And when there's literally every spectrum of symptom that you guys described today that could be an issue, you may be able to clear up a lot of those health issues that are making you go to the doctor if you actually are celiac and don't know it. Well, hopefully this show made a difference for people and turn some light bulbs on if they're listening and they're having some of the symptoms and noticing some of these conditions as well. So thank you so much for being here today, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm sure I'll have you back again sometime. Guys, that was our show today. We talked about celiac disease with two great experts, Adriana Smallwood, advisor for the Celiac Association, and Grand Parisien, allergy-free baker from Nourish Bakery in Paradise. Thanks for joining us. We will catch you again same time next week.